Hi, and welcome to revisionmedia.org with me, Paul Stevenson, on this Thursday, the 26th of September 2019. Glad to be with you. I hope I find you all well, and I'll be with you through till 11 p.m. here in the UK where I am. That's through, 5 till 6 Eastern Standard Time. And if any of you have been watching the political arena over here in the UK, I mean, it is unprecedented territory. We've had the government being taken to the Supreme Court to rule on Boris Johnson's Conservative Party's proroguing of Parliament, which is basically a suspension of Parliament for 5 weeks, because the Parliament decided that that they didn't have enough time after 3 years of stopping and frustrating and thwarting Brexit. They decided they didn't have enough time to discuss Brexit any further, and particularly enough time to block a no-deal Brexit, which is essentially the closest thing you'll get to an actual Brexit. And the great irony, of course, is that 3 days previously, this Parliament, this Remainer corrupt Parliament, establishment Parliament, that failed to deliver Brexit in 3 years and extended it from the 31st of March to the 31st of October, then, you know, they think that they haven't got enough time to stop no deal. And the great irony is, of course, that they managed to stop a no deal and bring it into legislation in quick fire time. As I say, these people can get things done when they need to get it done and when it fits their agenda. Dithering and delaying for 3+ years, including extending the original departure date of the 31st of March, because they can't get their crap together. And then when they really need to legislate and to get moving, they can move very quickly, as was seen in bringing the bill forward, as Johnson calls it, the surrender bill, to stop no deal. And that was, of course, voted through, as you'd expect from the Remainer establishment Parliament. And so there was no point in the prorogation in the first place, really. And yet there was no point really in the fact that they were going there to moan about not having enough time, particularly to stop the no-deal Brexit. They'd actually got it done before the courts were even before the courts even heard their case. And the courts didn't exactly mess around and dither when it came to hearing their case either. And then, of course, 11 Supreme Court judges voted in favour of the Remainers, who of the Parliament, against the executive, against the government. Unprecedented. And even though it doesn't affect Brexit itself, nothing's changed. It's a moral victory, and it's staggering to think that you would have 11 Supreme Court judges all in unison voting against the government. You know, a prime minister who went to the Queen, you know, to prorogue Parliament, you know, a machination of Parliament, which has occurred in history time and time again. And yet when Boris Johnson does it, the mere fact that it never was anyway, as I say, in light of the fact that they got no deal legally stopped 3 days earlier. But the fact that it may even affect the establishment and the remaining Parliament, affect them at all in any way negative, the Supreme Court ruled in their favour. So it's just every aspect of the establishment now is just, in my opinion, just bought and paid for by the internationalists, like the EU. And, you know, and the Parliament. I mean, it's just, it really is staggering. As I say, even though it doesn't affect the result of Brexit, it was a real, I don't know, it was a real thumbing the nose at parliamentary and just the etiquette of this country. I just find it embarrassing. Anyway, as you would expect, Boris Johnson was brought back to the Parliament was renewed. It was the proroguing was deemed null and void, and they were renewed yesterday. And of course, you had these a cacophony of these hypocritical hyenas in the Parliament attacking Johnson, many of them taking the moral high ground, which is just laughable and hypocritical beyond belief. And in fairness to Johnson, he wasn't backing down. So here he is yesterday.
Statement, the Prime Minister.
Everybody will forget the last few years. Mr. Speaker, I have to say I think that is an extraordinary delusion and a fantasy. A fantasy even greater than the communist fantasies peddled by the leader of the opposition. It will not happen. The public don't want another referendum. What they want and what they demand is that we honour the promise we made to the voters to respect the first referendum. And they also want us to move on, to put Brexit behind us and focus on the NHS, on violent crime, and on cutting the cost of living. And that is why I brought forward a Queen's speech. This government intends to present a programme for life after Brexit. But some members of this House could not stand that either. Instead of facing the voters, the opposition turned tail and fled from an election. Instead of deciding to let the voters decide, they ran for the courts instead. And despite the fact that I followed the exact same process as my predecessors in calling a Queen's speech, the Supreme Court was asked to intervene in this process for the first time ever, and it is absolutely no disrespect to the judiciary to say I think the court was wrong to pronounce on what is essentially a political question at a time.
Order! Whatever the strength and intensity of feeling and the passions to which these matters give rise, we must hear what is being said in the chamber, and I wish to hear the Prime Minister.
It was wrong to pronounce on what is essentially a political question at a time of great national controversy. So we have opposition MPs that block and delay everything, running to the courts to block and delay even more, including blocking legislation to improve and invest in our NHS and keeping violent criminals in jail. I think the people outside this House understand what is happening. They know that nothing can disguise the truth. It's not just that this Parliament is gridlocked, paralysed, and refusing to deliver on the priorities of the people. It's not just unable to move forward. It's worse than that, Mr. Speaker. Out of sheer selfishness and political cowardice, members opposite are unwilling to move aside and give the people a say. They see MPs demanding that the people should be given a say one week and then running away from the election that would provide the people with a say. And worst of all, they see ever more elaborate legal and political manoeuvres from the party opposite, which is determined, absolutely determined, to say, we know best, and thumb their noses at the 17.4 million people who voted to leave the European Union.
Okay, so Johnson has come out fighting, and what Johnson's now, what you now have in the British political arena now is exactly what the same as in America. You have Johnson playing the Trump card, pardon the pun. He's basically vocalizing, expressing the public mood. And that is his main weapon. And the Remainers and the Parliament know this. And they know that what he's saying, that people are sick and tired of it. They want to get on with it. They want to deliver Brexit with a deal, if possible, but without a deal, if necessary. And that people up and down the country, both Remainers and Leavers, are sick and tired of it all. They don't want all these delays anymore. They don't want to delay it to the 31st of January anymore. And Johnson came out fighting yesterday. He didn't come into the Parliament with his head down, you know, feeling like the Remainer Parliament thought he should do. There was somehow some great shame in what happened by losing the vote from by the Supreme Court, and they hated it. They hated the fact that he came in there and laid it on them. and his defense was attack, and they couldn't handle it, quite frankly. So they, what you saw yesterday was this resorting to, mainly by women in the parliament, resorting to emotional arguments, and exactly the same type of stuff by these yapping women that you see in the Democrats over there in the US, where they're, when they don't like the message, they shoot, they attack the person who's delivering the message. So they have to try and say his language was inflammatory, and that he's causing division, and that he's bringing, he's causing hatred. Exactly the sort of stuff that the Democrats throw at Trump all the time. It's rarely about what Trump's policies are or what he's done and what he hasn't failed to do as a politician. It's always that he's causing division. He's solely responsible for causing hatred and division, and needs to watch his language. We're seeing an exact repeat of that now in British politics. And he's right. You do not give these hypocrites, you don't give an inch to them, because they will trample you into the ground. Don't apologize to these people. As I say, they're a bunch of liars and hypocrites, and it's stomach churning and very difficult to swallow when these people attempt to take the moral high ground. There was a lady, Jess Phillips, yesterday. As I say, they really, they couldn't handle this. It's just like the snowflake phenomena. And this is what this. I mean, I'm sure if you're honest there, or if you're aware of the U.S. political scene at all there, and you're tuning into politics at all, this will sound very familiar. This was Jess Phillips today. She's a Labour MP, calling on Boris Johnson to say sorry for his comments yesterday in Parliament about using the word surrender bill, and, you know, they brought Joe Cox into it, and a prime minister, or an MP who died earlier in the year, which was probably a total false flag, who died a few years back in the run up. She was a campaign for Remaining in the run up to Brexit, and who got brought up yesterday. Of course, as I say, they resort to these emotional type tactics. And this is what you got yesterday, or today, in response to yesterday.
I'm just going to start by saying that I am not, and nobody in here is a traitor. They're not ignoring their constituents. They are.
You see, they don't like it when the people react to them with language like traitor and treacherous, and when they refer to the surrender bill, which was stopping no deal. They're happy enough to be bold enough and audacious enough and arrogant enough to stop a no deal and to bring it into legislation. They're happy enough to do the opposite of what they're elected to do. And then when people call them traitors, and when people say they're guilty of treachery and call it the surrender bill, it's all we can do. We can label them and be honest about it. They have to say, no, this is causing division. You know, this is not fair. We don't deserve it. We're not traitors. We're not traitors. And it's not fair that we should be called traitors. My heart bleeds for these scumbags. Nobody cares. Go and do something else then. Let somebody else do the job. They might be better at it. They might be more honest and have some integrity. And if you would actually do what you're elected to do, you wouldn't be called a traitor. Don't blame Boris Johnson or Nigel Farage. It's the people who think you're traitors. We don't need Boris Johnson or Nigel Farage to show us what's going on and to recognize treachery and betrayal when we see it, and corruption and collusion and conspiracy. We don't need Boris Johnson to call it the surrender bill to realize that's what it is. You could call it any number of pejorative things and they'd be accurate. It's the Parliament stopping the implementation of the result of that referendum. And these people have the audacity to think we give a shit when they're upset about the fact that we call it for what it is and call a spade a spade. Go and do something else. You're not very good at it. You won't be missed.
In good faith. I was raised thinking that we were the goodies and that over there were the baddies. And what I found when I got here was that everybody pretty much just in a different way wants to get to the same conclusion. And I will wager that more so than the Prime Minister, I spend time in my constituency office loving and laughing with my constituents, no matter what they voted. I don't just want to probe into the idea that we all get abuse, and no doubt we're going to hear a lot of that today, because we all get abuse, and I've had a death threat this week that literally quoted the Prime Minister and used the Prime Minister's name and words
getting a death threat.
Yeah, but so it's the Prime Minister's fault that she got a death threat. This is exactly the same type of rhetoric and language that you see in America with Trump. This is Trump's language is causing hate. Trump's language is causing division. Every time some white guy, some white nutcase takes up, gets a gun and shoots some people, it's Trump's fault. Same playbook that we're seeing now over here as well.
It's delivered to my staff. So we know that it gets out. What I want to look at today and what I want answers to today is when there is a clear strategy to divide. The use of language.
You see, it's a clear strategy to divide now. This is just, you see, this is a political strategy now. So the reaction to their treachery and betrayal. So they want to be able to shaft the people, do the opposite of what the people voted for, and then call it, it's a cynical political strategy by Boris Johnson to cause division and hatred. No, sorry, bury your head in the sand, take what's coming to you. It's a reaction to your bullshit over the last 3 years. What do you expect? We had this vote in 2016. We're almost at 3.5 years later, and we're expected to feel sorry for you and blame Boris Johnson and his language for the fact that we're angry? Give me a break, woman.
Yesterday and over the past few weeks, such as the surrender bill, such as invoking the war, such as talking about betrayal and treachery, it has clearly been tested and workshopped and worked
on. Oh, it has clearly. It is entirely couldn't possibly be just a reaction.
Hatred and division. I get it. It works. It is working. I mean, we're all ambitious. I'm not going to pretend that I'm not ambitious, but I also have a soul. It is not sincere. It is totally planned. It is completely and utterly a part of a strategy designed by somebody to harm and cause hatred in our country. When I hear of my friend's murder and the way that it has made me and my colleagues feel and feel scared, described as humbug, I actually don't feel anger towards the Prime Minister. I feel pity for those of you who still have to toe his line. You, the people opposite me, know how appalling it was to describe the murder of my friend as mere humbug. Can I ask everybody to act with calm and dignity in this moment? I want to ask the Prime Minister to apologise and to tell him that the bravest, strongest thing to say is sorry. It will make him look good. It will not upset the people who want Brexit in this country if he acts for once like a statesman. Calling me names, putting words in my mouth and in the mouth of my dead friend makes me cross and angry. It makes me scared even. But I will not react. The Prime Minister wants me to react so that I join in the chaos that keeps this hatred and fear on our streets. I simply ask the Minister today to...
You know, there was a poll done recently, you know, and this is the great irony and hypocrisy and double standard, isn't it? There was a poll done recently where, I think it was in London, which is largely Remain, where Remainers said they wouldn't even rent a room or share a flat or a house share with somebody who voted to leave the EU. This is how hateful these people are. That they wouldn't even rent a room to someone in the house, in a shared house, or share a flat with someone who voted to leave the EU. And you're not seeing that same kind of extreme attitudes from the Leavers. The irony is these people are full of hatred as they go around accusing, and in Jess Phillips' case here, whinging about hatred. These people are full of hatred to the point that they wouldn't even rent a room to someone or share a flat with someone. It's a staggering statistic. You can look it up. Of a large percentage of Remainers said they wouldn't even rent a room with someone who voted to leave. talk about not being able to disagree with these people. These people are, it's like being ruled by, or, you know, having a parliament full of just angry little children. You can't disagree with them. We've known this for years now. These people don't, you can't have discussion with them. They have to shut it down. It's the total snowflake thing in the universities. They can't have debate. They have to stamp their feet and have a hissy fit and have a tantrum when someone disagrees with them and then accuse everybody else of being hatred. No, we just disagree with you. Strongly, but we disagree with you. And how come it's always the other side that's guilty of division? Why don't you just agree with us then, and then we'll all be just the same, and there'll be no division. I mean, I'm sure your heart, you know, your heart really bleeds, listeners, I'm sure, for Jess Phillips here.
Request to the Prime Minister, who's notable by his bravery today, I ask him to ask the Prime Minister to meet with me in private, with his advisers and some of my colleagues and my friends from Joe's family, so that we can explain our grief and try to...
You see, listen to the tone now. It's the assumed, you know, we're reasonable and, you know, we are morally superior and, you know, can't you just come and have a talk with us? You know, taking the moral high ground, grabbing... They're a drug of choice, of righteous indignation. These people are literally addicted to feeling morally superior and totally incapable, well, unwilling, of course, to ever admit any wrongdoing on their part or participating in any division or thwarting democracy or anything. These people are just, in their own eyes, it's just we've got a parliament full of Mother Teresa's, according to these people.
Understand why it is so abhorrent that he has chosen a strategy to divide rather than
a strategy that you don't like because you know it's effective, not because it's divisive, but because it's not Theresa May who buckles to everything. It's a guy, whether he believes it or not, has realized that the national mood is to leave the EU with or without a deal, and to get it done and to delay no further. And we're sick and tired of it. We've had enough of it. Johnson is only expressing the mood of the nation. And now you don't like it. You've got no answer to it. And you've been exposed by Johnson yesterday. It's been a bunch of hypocrites trying to stop democracy. He said it in forceful terms. It is a surrender bill. And you don't like it now. So it has to be focused on this moral issue now. The language that's been used, the hatred that you're stirring up. I mean, who cares? I mean, it's just bullshit.
Minister Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I will show a calm and dignity in my responses today as well. I would be very clear that the government is looking at how we create a safe environment. How we, and not just in terms of the members of parliament, but for journalists and for the others in public life who can face abuse merely
for the others who want to run roughshod over democracy and then be able to, you know, get off without getting any stick. That's essentially what they're doing. I mean, they want to be able to just do what they want, screw you, the voter, and then when we get a bit of flack about it, we want to say, this isn't fair, this is unjust, this is hatred towards us. And the next thing, there'll be some sort of legislation brought in, and they'll take it to the Supreme Court about the type of language that's been allowed to use in the Parliament. Or it'll be deemed offensive. I mean, the whole judiciary now has gone progressive. I mean, this is, it's like, where will it end?
Involved in what they do, and of course, members of the judiciary. I'm always clear no one is a traitor for saying what they believe or for arguing a different political point. That is part of public debate. The last actual traitor was in 1946, someone who tried to support those looking to overturn this democracy by violent means. But I think it is right to say that the government is moved to take action. We have the online harms white paper working with colleagues in the Department for Culture, Media and Sport to tackle some of the corrosive nature of debate online. We see some of the work being done across government to try and tackle where things are being done and to make sure people do feel safe to express their views, and being very clear that the law applies as much online as it does in the physical world. And I think we can all look at what may have been said over years, and I'm sure the honourable member will look at anything she said over the years about particular political figures as well.
I wouldn't hold your breath for that.
How we don't get into a game of whataboutery, but it's how we focus on what we can do to protect. And also heard the comments you made this morning, Mr. Speaker, about some of the suggestions, and I'm sure you, like me, will be interested to hear some of the thoughts that come out about that idea that has been floated with you. And of course, as the minister whose responsibility it is for our Defending Democracy programme, I'd be only too happy to meet with the honourable member to discuss in a different format to where it comes, and ultimately to see where we can go with the approach to the House. As I say, we're already committed to legislate around intimidation election time, one of the things that many picked up last time round following the election, and see this as an ongoing rate plus.
So anyway, I want to get off Brexit now. I covered it earlier, and I want to move on to the other big issue that I've been thinking about over the last week or so, which is the biggest existential threat that we face. I mean, all this Brexit stuff, I mean, what's the point in worrying about? All these people are worried about, these Remainers are worried about the future. If we leave with no deal, it's going to ruin the youth's future and it's going to ruin our economic future. These are the same people that apparently think we don't have a future because the world's going to end in 11 years because of climate change. And so what's the point in worrying about the effects of no deal? We're going to go over a cliff and have economic and cultural catastrophe. Because the world's going to end anyway. Greta Thunberg addressed the EU and she told us so. So it must be true. So, I mean, literally listening to this, I mean, this is, I mean, I don't want to be too harsh. She's a 16-year-old. She's obviously brainwashed. And she's got Asperger's or something. And she's obviously been manipulated and is just an unwitting pawn. And it's so cynical by her globalist internationalist handlers. And but talk about the embodiment of the social justice warrior, the social justice warrior and the righteous indignation and the emotionalism on steroids. It just is just Greta just personifies it all. Any wonder why she's the poster girl for the latest globalist cult of global warming that we all have to suffer having shoved down our throats. Here is Greta. It's a shame you can't see her on the radio because her facial expressions are just classic. Priceless.
Our message is that we'll be watching you.
Ooh. Ooh, she'll be watching you. They are anyway. Of course they are. You're right about that.
I should be back in school.
You're right again.
The other side of the ocean.
Indeed.
Yet, you all come to us young people for hope.
No, we don't.
How dare you?
How dare you?
You have stolen my dreams.
There it is.
My childhood with your empty words. And yet, I'm one of the lucky ones. People are suffering. People are dying. Entire ecosystems collapsing.
Yeah, they're dying in Zionist wars, and you don't seem to give a shit about that, do you? And global warming my arse.
We are in the beginning of a mass extinction, and all you can talk about is money and fairy tales of eternal economic growth. How dare you?
How dare you?
The science has been crystal clear. How dare you continue to look away and come here saying that you're doing enough when the politics and solutions needed are still nowhere in sight? You say you hear us and that you understand the urgency. No matter how sad and angry I am, I do not want to believe that. Because if you really understood the situation and still kept on failing to act, then you would be evil, and that I refuse to believe. of cutting our emissions in half in 10 years only gives us a 50% chance of staying below 1.5 degrees and the risk of setting off irreversible chain reactions beyond human control. 50% may be acceptable to you, but those numbers do not include tipping points, most feedback loops, additional warming hidden by toxic air pollution, or the aspects of equity and climate justice. They also rely on my generation sucking hundreds of billions of tons of your CO2 out of the air with technologies that barely exist. So a 50% risk is simply not acceptable to us, we who have to live with the consequences. To have a 67% chance of staying below a 1.5 degrees of global temperature rise, the best odds given by the IPCC, the world had 420 gigatons of CO2 left to emit back on January 1st, 2018. Today, that figure is already down to less
than... Anyway, folks, it really had a strong impact on me, Greta's speech. And so I decided to do a little video in response to it. Because, of course, this is our Western media complaining to us about global warming, us evil people here in the West. And it seems like everything else in the West, or everything else in the world that goes wrong, it's our fault. So I did a little video today about Greta's speech on YouTube, so I'll just play that.
I just thought I'd do a quick video on climate change. If you were, if you're wondering what I was doing, I was just holding my breath. Because I've worked out that if I hold my breath for 60 seconds, six times every hour, that I've watched Greta Thunberg's recent video. Very convicting, very impressive. You know, I was totally unaware of the scale of the problem, and I've decided to take direct and immediate action by lowering my carbon footprint, by stopping breathing, essentially. Because it makes total sense. I mean, I've worked out that since we exhale CO2, and since CO2 is directly responsible for bringing the world to an end in 11 years, and it is, Greta said it is, that if I stop breathing for 6 minutes in every hour, I will have, and do that every day, I will have reduced my carbon footprint by 10% every day. Well, slightly less than 10%, because I'm 12 hours in a day, or 14 hours in a day when I'm awake. You know, I can't help but exhale when I'm sleeping. But still, it's a significant reduction in my carbon footprint just by stopping breathing. And it's a simple. The genius of this idea is that, you know, anybody can do it. You can do it anywhere, anytime, and it doesn't cost you anything. So if you happen to be a white capitalist, for example, it won't cost you anything, honky. You won't have to worry about it affecting your pocket and the economy. Never mind the economy, and what good is it having money, having a great economy, if there's no planet to spend it on? So, you know, as I said, I really wasn't aware. But I am now after watching Greta. I mean, it's the greatest existential threat that we face. There's no doubt about that. Greta says it. I've seen it on BBC News, CNN, MSNBC, Channel 4 News, Sky News. So, you know, there's no doubt about it. You know, it's beyond the argument now. I mean, all those media channels can't be wrong if they're all saying it and repeating it over and over again. And I know some of you are conspiracy theorists and just don't want to be honest. Oh, it's fake news, you hear it's fake news. Now, come on, be honest with yourself. Stop destroying the planet. Stop breathing. You know, and for white people, you know, even though we're a minority in the global demographic, you know, don't blame the Africans and the Indians and the Chinese for all their huge populations. Take responsibility, because I've thought about this. And if you're a white person, and, you know, with all that bigotry, xenophobia, racism, and general hate running through your veins, it seems perfectly reasonable and logical to me that your CO2 emissions from breathing is obviously going to have higher levels of toxicity. So if you're a white person, particularly if you're a white male and straight, God forbid a Christian, obviously your CO2 emissions are just going to be more toxic. You know, a little white family of, you know, with two kids, particularly if they're male children and straight, you know, that they're going to cause more damage with their CO2 emissions from breathing than a medium-sized village, say, of 100 black people in Africa. It's just logic. I mean, you're going to have that. If you're going to have that level of hate running through your veins, how is your CO2 emissions going to escape that? They're just not. So I've heard people say, oh, it's, you know, why is the media always preaching to white Westerners? Even though we're such a small demographic and we're not even having children. Good, you're not having children, when you consider the damage you're doing. You know? So, I mean, who do you think you are, breathing all the time? It's typical white privilege stuff, isn't it, really, when you think about it? Oh, I just, look at me. I hate myself. And I'm glad I hate myself. What kind of a person would I be if I didn't hate myself? You know, I thought about this, and I felt guilty enough before I saw Greta and her video for slavery and for the British imperialism and the Holocaust. You know, you hear these people saying, oh, I wasn't around in those days, and it wasn't my ancestors. I'm not even British, or if you're British, I'm not even American. Why should I take responsibility for it? You should. Be honest. That's what I like about Greta. She keeps you honest. You know, it's not guilt by association for all those things. You know, I personally speaking, I feel direct collective racial guilt for those transgressions of my ancestors. It may as well be me having slaves, or me being in Nazi Germany, or me on those ships heading out to invade the whole world in the British Empire. I'm not going to, you know, you get people saying, oh, it's nothing to do with me. You know, or they maybe feel a little bit of guilt, and, you know, well, I feel maybe indirectly guilty. No, you're part of the problem. You're directly guilty for those things, and it's the same with global warming. It's the same attitude, isn't it? That's the problem, you see. It's not just you breathe, it's the attitude. So stop breathing, you know? You know, as Greta said, how dare you? How dare you? Yeah, how dare you? You know, breathing all the time. And as she said, you know, we're one of the lucky ones. You know, apparently, you know, there's people in parts of the world who have literally breathed themselves out to extinction. And we're still here. We're the lucky ones. We still get to breathe. And still get to destroy. You know, It's time to take direct and immediate action. You know, don't take the piss. You know, take it seriously. It's a serious issue, as I say. The BBC aren't going to lie. Or CNN. I mean, it's the greatest existential threat that we face. So, as I say, it's a genius solution. Anybody can do it anytime, and if you're an evil white capitalist, it doesn't cost you anything. All right? So there's no excuses. In fact, don't even wait till tomorrow. Take direct and immediate action. Stop breathing immediately, even while you're watching this, if you care at all. You know, all I can say is thank God for Greta. You know, I'm glad that there's people like her around to keep us honest. You know, as I say, you know, I hated myself enough. And I'm glad I hate myself, as I say. You know, what sort of a person would I be if I didn't hate myself for all those horrible things that I mentioned? And now destroying the planet. Just stop it. Just stop the breathing, okay? Anybody can do it, anytime. Simple solution. Who do you think you are breathing all the time anyway? So, that's it. Simple message. Take direct and immediate action. Go, Greta. Stop breathing.
So that was my YouTube video earlier, and that's it, folks. You know, do your bit. You know, take responsibility and stop breathing today. I think that's a good meme. I think we can get some T-shirts done up about that. Stop breathing. You know, it's a bit like Make America Great Again. Just get like, you know, get hats and stuff. You know, stop breathing. I mean, obviously, you know, we're only going to be able to sell those hats to white people because we're the only people, you know, in the West here. It's not the Africans in Africa. Or, you know, or the Chinese or anything who are the problem. No, it's us over here. And, you know, come on, as I said, take it seriously. It's a serious issue. Don't ruin it for the kids in the future and their futures. Enough's enough, you know. The science is in. So there we are. The whole world's gone mad is all I can say. I mean, oh, God. We didn't have any callers today. I was hoping somebody might have called in. It's good to chew the fat with someone as well about this stuff. I probably should have said to call in. And anyway, I think we're going to be having Graham on next at 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock. So there we are. We've got complete chaos over here. The progressives are and the Remainers are losing the argument. They don't like this new conservative leader who's actually saying what the public are thinking. So they have to now start whinging, essentially, and try the snowflake approach. Oh, we're being bullied. Oh, this language is causing division and hatred, and we get death threats. it's all Boris Johnson's fault. He's just like, it's a wonder they didn't say it. He just spent a couple of days with Donald Trump, and it's Trump's fault. But make no mistake about it, it's exactly the same thing that's going on. And of course, this global warming stuff is just a global socialist, you know, finally bring a complete end to fossil fuels and the jobs that go with it and bring in a nice global socialist, sterile world system. It's a religion, isn't it? And we've got the Messiah here, Greta Thunberg. So all I can say, folks, is before I can sign off, is take a look at yourself, generally. Stop being haters. You know? How dare you? How dare you? Right, I'll be back again next Thursday. I think, what's that? The third of October. Wow, September went quickly. Every month goes quickly. Donate to revisionmedia.org, and we are 100% listener supported. And if you like the work I do, you can donate on PayPal, Stevenson_P5@sky.com. My YouTube channel is Paul Stevenson, and you can see various different interviews I've done up there, and my new video on how to tackle climate change by stopping breathing. Simple solution. I will be back next Thursday. Until then, take care.